What does it mean to you guys to have, like, a psychic experience? I've never had one, or if I have, I don't know it. So I'm curious what that feels like, or like how it manifests. It's a serious question. Yeah.
Ask him.
Hey, dude.
You want me to answer?
Yeah, he's asking you.
Oh.
I'm asking both of you, but I know you've had one, Jenny. Like, I'm curious.
I think for everybody it's different, but for me it's just a really, really strong knowing. And I think it's just something I've had to develop because I overthink it. Like I have like these knowings and then I have those little communications.
Right.
Where it just becomes, I can't hear someone talking in my ear, but my thoughts are just like telling the story, and I just know it's a subtle difference. I know when it's me and when it's not me.
Yeah.
I can just, because it's very rapid.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't stop. Mm. And it just keeps, it starts small, and then it just keeps evolving into this big story.
Mm.
And then there's a lot of repetition, going over the same stuff over and over again until I get a little more information about something.
Mm.
I don't know, now I just know when I'm getting that.
Okay.
When it's not me.
Yeah, man, so when I started doing, like, trying to tune into the psychic stuff, I always felt like I was really bad at it because I didn't see things visually.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's written towards or oriented towards, you know, seeing things. And then, you know, you get like, you know, you get communication from spirits or ancestors or whatever and hear things, but I don't actually hear things either. You know, so it's like, for me, it's more the sense of, it's kind of like hearing, but I'm not hearing. It's all like these thoughts are in my mind, or these words are in my mind. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I think ultimately it's just kind of like you have to test it out and be like, act on it and see what happens, you know? Obviously don't act on it if it's telling you to kill somebody or something, but unless, you know,
right,
they need it.
Unless they really deserve it.
Right. And you're willing to pay the price.
Is it? Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I don't think I've ever had that experience.
All right, so you're listening to the Naked Songwriter Podcast. I have a very, very special guest on the podcast today. I'm in Boston with my brother Dave, and we're gonna be talking about free energy, free sex. Oh wait, free energy. See, that was a psychic compression right there.
Affirmation from the drive.
Energy to run your washer.
Yeah. Psychic phenomena and how to know when you're experiencing it, or you know, if you can experience it, and also Chinese disaster supplanters.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is,
how you can do your part to eliminate that scourge from the earth.
Or the lengths we go to liven up our unhappy childhoods.
Right.
I don't know. I was so bummed out when that wasn't true, man.
I was too, when you found out.
Yeah. Oh, when I found out, or when you found out?
Well, as long as you believed it, I figured we were good.
Right. Because you probably were believing it too.
Yeah,
right?
I was.
Once we got into it. But you had to have had psychic experiences. I mean, we've had telepathic psychic experiences.
Well, that's true. Oh, yeah, on the whatever that route was.
Yeah, the Boga.
Is that, yeah, that's what that was?
I think, yeah, I did some research. I think it was Iboga.
All right.
From Africa. Should we give some background for that?
Yeah, sure.
All right, so 1990, something like that,
91?
Yeah, somewhere around then. I was living in Washington, D.C., and Dave came out to visit me, and don't listen to this part, Jenny. I was dating this French girl.
Martine.
Who was also, unbeknownst to me, dating some Rasta guys. Yeah.
Martine.
Martine. Yeah. Oh. And she hooked us up with this bag of very bitter tasting root.
Was it her?
Yeah, man, it came through her.
I thought it was Sean's friend that had diplomatic immunity. Okay.
No, right. Man, it was, yeah. And,
oh, right, she probably got it from her Rasta.
Yeah, yeah, like, okay. she hooked us up, basically.
Okay.
And, we didn't know what this was, but they said it was psychedelic. Yeah. Man, this stuff was so crazy. It was super intense. And so we had stories we probably shouldn't tell on the podcast, but one story. Well, go ahead.
Well, I remember we were sitting on the front porch of that house in Arlington, like, you know, and you always had, like, I don't want to spiral into this, but you always had a knack of, like, during our psychedelic experiences, of saying something that was like, would make me start tripping. Like, you would say something, and then I'd be like, oh, shit. Like,
I didn't even know that, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, like, do you remember that time when we were driving back from the Detroit airport, and, like, I had a bunch of bladder, and we just kept taking it, and then there was a snowstorm, and we stopped at that mall.
Yeah.
And we were like, this stuff ain't working.
Should we take some more? Oh, no, we went and bought some Robitussin.
Yeah. And so we did the Robo, and then we got back in the car. And it was snowing like crazy. And you said something to me, and it was like, as soon as you said it, I don't know what you said. I can't
remember. I said, did we just do a 360 on the interstate?
Yeah.
Because we did. But I wasn't sure, because you were acting like nothing had happened.
Yeah. And all of a sudden...
He was driving.
Yeah, I was driving.
Maybe my brother was driving me.
And then all of a sudden, I was like, oh. And you did that on that, with that roof. That's all I was trying to say, is I remember you had gone in the house for something, and you came back out and said something to me, and I was just like, oh, I'm fucked up. Anyway.
Well, so we had, like, tons of psychic experiences. I mean, you know, I mean, I think that there's a reason that people do that stuff, right?
Yeah.
It is, like, to open up your psychic center. So, like, I'm thinking of... We're downtown, we're on Capitol Hill, we're across from the Library of Congress, the Madison Building, which is just granite, maybe? Right. But it's just plain. It's very plain. Just a big stone edifice, basically. And I'm like, man, dude, do you see those Egyptians? And there were all these, like, Egyptian figures, like the stuff that you see, you know, from the pyramids and on the wall.
Yep.
And Dave said, yeah, I see it. And I was, you know, I'm just wondering if you're just saying you see it.
No.
So I'm like, okay, you see the lady over there with the, like, you know, headdress? Who's next to her? And you described, like, the warrior guides or guards or whatever that were next to her. And we were just describing this picture.
Yeah, I remember that.
And that's when Jeff, the Egyptian from Pittsburgh, came by.
That's right. That's right.
We kind of drafted him into the trip, but he was, like, totally playing along with
it. Yeah, he was good. No, it was like, yeah, it was like a mosaic on the wall.
Yeah.
The mosaic quality, the, like, giant.
Yeah, which I've always kind of thought, I'd be interested in your thoughts about this, but I've always kind of thought that that mosaic exists.
Mm.
On some level, some dimensionality, it's there.
That's cool.
You know?
That's really cool.
I mean, because, like, the Founding Fathers were really tied into that whole...
It's true.
Masons and the Egyptian mythology and stuff.
Yeah, it's true.
But yeah, I think with being aware of psychic, what was it, like, psychic impressions? Or?
Yeah, like, what does it feel like? Like, how do you know?
I think it's, like, you know, probably different for everybody. I remember, like, reading once, you know, you should just ask for, like, if you're a... visual person, like, you could ask for a flash of light, or if you're a kinesthetic person, ask for a feeling in your body. And I couldn't trust, like, my vision or hearing, I felt like. So I remember saying, like, okay, you know, when my intuition is, like, active, I want to have a feeling in my body that I, you know, will recognize. Then nothing happened. And then I kept asking for it, like, and you know, it's like, you could do it while you're meditating or before you go to sleep. And at some point, I have felt like this, it almost felt like a muscle just gently pulsing in my left temple, like right here, right next to my ear. And there was this thought in my mind that didn't seem like one of my normal thoughts, so I wrote it, you know, I wrote it down.
Yeah.
And then you got to act on whatever it is, like, even if it's just writing it down and, you know, nowadays I probably put it on my notes on my phone.
Yeah.
But then that became, like, pretty much my constant companion when I was journaling for years.
That's cool.
Like, once I'd start kicking into, you know, I'm kind of channeling is such a weird word, but I always think if I'm channeling, it's coming from my higher self or from the part of me that's connected to God or the divine, right?
Right.
But I would start, like, you know, that thing would kick in, and then I'd be like, oh, yeah, this is, I never would have thought of this on my own. Chinese disaster supplanters. Came home from school, I think. We're living in Lafayette. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Maybe it was in the summer, though.
It was warm.
Yeah.
It was a house with a big, big cement front porch painted gray. And a little sidewalk and a chain link fence in a neighborhood. You get the picture. And lots of winged ants were out that day, like flying around all over the place. And somehow, I don't remember what happened. I must have told you they were Chinese disaster supplanters, I guess.
Yeah, well, you were like, we gotta kill all of these bugs. And I'm like, why? What are they? And by the way, Dave's 3 years younger than me, but I don't know. He was always like a little bit more on the ball with. We're both Pisces, but he was a little more on the ball with reality, I think, than I was. And he's like, they're Chinese disaster supplanters. If we don't kill them, they're going to eat the whole house. And I think they would eventually eat the whole world.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Ravenous beasts. Yeah. So then, supplanter I had gotten from the biblical story of Jacob, right? The supplanter? Wasn't he the one with the coat of many colors? Yeah.
Yeah.
The supplanter. Supplanting Esau, yep. Right?
Yeah.
So that's where I got that word. And obviously, disaster goes anywhere.
Right.
And Chinese, I have no idea. I think that was a moment of prescience there.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. And so then we went around. And I think we went and asked Mom for, like, a spray bottle, didn't we?
I think we did ask her for,
like, weapons to combat the... Yeah.
And she was like, well, what do you
yeah.
What do you need it for?
Yeah.
Like, the Chinese disaster supplanters, they're on the side of the house. And I think at that point she was like, okay, here you go, because that's like, you know,
right.
At least an hour where she wouldn't have to be like, Mom.
Right, right. And I don't, that was the same house where Thumper used to hang from the toes of our shoes.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Remember that swing set? I still remember that. Like, I very, very clearly remember the weight of a dog on the toe of your shoe, swinging back and forth in her, like, crazy face, those little white teeth, growling.
Yeah, because we get up on the porch and we block off the porch with, like, lawn chairs.
Yeah.
So she couldn't get on there. And then we'd lure her over to the middle, and then we'd jump over the side and run to the swing set, try to get there before she could bite us or turn the shepherd. Yeah.
So.
That was a good lie.
Yeah. And we beat them back. Think about it. The world's still safe. Like, it's been how many years, and they haven't ever returned. So
I was crushed when Mom told me the truth, though. I think your brother just made that up. Like, no.
I don't know how long that went on, but it seems like it was hours.
It does.
At least hours.
I think there were a lot of those.
There were a lot of them, as I recall. Like, everywhere.
You're gonna take over the world, man.
That's true.
Need numbers.
That's true. Yeah, I don't see. I haven't seen any winged ants here in Boston. Maybe they're like a Midwestern thing. I'm not sure.
Gross.
But I don't even know if they're just ants, right?
That fly. That's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like cockroaches that fly in the south.
Oh yeah. Man.
Just not right.
You guys have seen that, right? Now you've been down there.
Yeah.
The palmetto bugs, as they call them.
Disgusting.
Oh, dude.
Do you remember that when we were living in RuPaul's old apartment in Midtown?
Yeah.
I remember one night I woke up because something went thump on my chest, and it was one of the big palmetto bugs that had fallen off the ceiling and landed on me, and it woke me up in my sleep.
Oh, man.
That was scary.
Oh, man. I won't start telling stories about the time in that apartment. I'll leave that out.
Okay.
Because there's a couple of them.
There was a lot of craziness that happened in that apartment.
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Including the Cheese for Dave program. Cheese which for we probably Dave. Could talk about.
We could talk about that.
That was a federally funded.
We could talk about that. Yeah. All right, so I had, that's a good one. So I had moved from Detroit to Atlanta in order to get away from a heroin addiction. I mean, that's what it was, right?
Yeah.
And so, but of course, you know, you tend to attract people into your life that you really want there. So I walked out one day, and there was this dude standing on the corner, and he knew me, and I knew him. And he said, "What do you need, man?" So, as it turned out, I think I was still trying to stay away from...
You so were, dude. Yeah. You so tried really hard.
Right. Man. So instead I got
after the poppies, I mean.
Oh, right.
But we'll tell that story later. Wait, can I go back and like set the stage for this? So, we had made a deal at some point, because there were these two kids that we knew... The Reams, right? Yeah. We used to go swimming in their pool. Yeah. They were older than us. They graduated from the same Christian school. And they both, I think, had moved down south. And Dave and I had made this deal that if things ever got too bad, like if we were thinking about committing suicide or something, that we could call each other up and we would move to the south together.
Yeah.
Get away from Michigan and get away from where we grew up and everything. So I was living in Paris, which sounds really glamorous, but that was a horrible year of my life. I was sick the whole year. I was just like depressed, and I ended up talking to my college music buddy, and he said, "Hey, you should come and try out for my brother's band in Atlanta." And I just needed any excuse to get out of where I was. So you and I talked, and you're like, "Hey, man, I just, because that was after you went to Grams's and quit.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So my brother had gone to my grandma's house and basically quit heroin cold turkey.
Twice.
Yeah. Honestly, my grandma, I talked to my grandma. She's like, "Honestly, yeah. Dave has such a terrible cold. He's been in that bedroom for 12 days.
Yeah. Exactly.
But he did it, man. He I mean, that's an all-time great life achievement.
Yeah, really. Dude. There are demons gnawing on his bones.
I wish he'd brought that. What was her name? Danielle. She was so nice.
She liked
Danielle because she never spoke.
Right. Because she was a good kite.
She was a good submissive woman. The way Christian women are supposed to be. Which is kind of an eye roll from Jenny. Anyway, so it all, like, the stars aligned. And we moved to Atlanta.
Yeah. Okay.
And so, then you met that guy on the street corner.
Yeah, so I met Reggie on the street corner, and I was, you know, I was like, "Well, you know, I don't want to do H, but maybe I'll do some blow," you know. So we drove down, and he hooked me up, had an 8-ball. And then all I remember is I locked myself in my room and just...
Oh, yeah. Right?
That was the Cheese for Dave. I was just locked in the room with no food.
Yeah, because you did all the blow.
Yeah.
And then you were just, like, in a terrible state.
Yeah, right? I was so paranoid.
And it was also the Teaks were there. That's why you locked yourself in there, is to get away from them.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
But then it
was... Who were the Teaks?
My college buddies.
It was Fred.
Yeah. My friend, the Colonel, was there, and he was there after the college kids left.
Right. The Colonel was, like, the most reasonable, the only maybe reasonable person I knew for a long time.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. Like, I had no friends, no family members. Nobody was reasonable in my life except for him.
Yeah. He was probably the only reasonably sane person.
Yeah. Yeah, he was there in the D.C. days, too.
In that house, yeah. Yeah. So at some point, he's like, "Hey, man, I'm a little bit worried about Dave. Do you think we should knock the door down or something? Because we'd knock and you wouldn't even answer."
I was locked in there.
Yeah.
I was locked in there with a 1990 whatever Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. But no, this is the truth. Instead of gripping, I wasn't gripping. I was like lovelorn. I don't even remember the model's name, but I was, like, inventing this whole fantasy where I was, like, falling in love with her. That's how bad off I was. Like, I wasn't even, like... Anyway.
That was bad.
I was, yeah, I mean, I was we've in seen a very, each other deeply very delusional, paranoid state.
Yeah.
For sure.
So all we had in the house for some reason was a giant block of government cheese.
Yeah.
Like white cheddar.
Yeah.
No, it was American.
It was American.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could still taste it.
We had no food.
Yeah.
So the colonel began going into your room and just putting a piece of cheese on the nightstand next to your bed.
Yeah. A little slice.
Yeah.
How'd he get in there?
I don't know.
He persuaded me to unlock the door.
Yeah. He sweet talked.
He had a long, reasonable talk with me while I was on the other side.
Which you can imagine him doing.
Yeah. It all made sense. And I remember, like, my sinuses were so inflamed from snorting all that powder that I could barely swallow the cheese, man. But it tasted like sanity. You know what I mean?
It tasted like that. It
tasted like the path back to reality.
Yeah. So the colonel would go in there, and, like, every couple hours, he'd be like, "All right, man, we need to check on the Cheese for Dave program."
Yeah.
And if there was no cheese on the nightstand, he'd bring it up.
Right.
That's a kind of weird recurring theme.
What? Cheese on the nightstand?
The colonel leaving you, like, little gifts whenever
your
supply ran dry.
Right, yeah. True.
Oh, man.
That's another story.
Yeah. That was an interesting time period, man.
The Atlanta stuff?
Yeah, I mean, because that was the start of us really becoming, I mean, you know, you're my best friend today, man.
Yeah.
And that was the start of us healing our relationship, I think.
It's true. We became allies for the first time.
Yeah.
We looked out for each other a little bit.
We had a common purpose.
Yeah, we did. And we had some fun together.
Yeah.
I remember the New York trip. Denise.
Yeah.
The fireworks in Brooklyn.
Why do you always want to talk about my old girlfriend?
Sorry,
Jenny. Here.
I'm sorry, because that is an epic story, man. You told. Can I tell?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, fine.
Oh no! Don't tell this. She's heard this too many times. I can't even. Like,
is this the Van Morrison?
I can't even play Van Morrison anymore, man.
All right, like, fine. But that's like the. Okay.
All right. Yeah.
I can leave.
No, stick around.
Stick around. We won't talk about that.
What I would say about that trip is I was really into... That was, like, also the time when the band was breaking up. The band that I'm in again, but, you know...
Yeah.
We had a good run there for 3 years or so in Atlanta, and it was splitting up. And I was starting to use Fruity Loops, which is now FL Studio. It's, like, commonly used by electronic musicians. But it was, like, just in its infancy, and I got it because it was freeware. And I was trying to, like, learn to sequence stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And then I had this little handheld mini recorder. I just was recording a bunch of stuff that was going on up on the rooftop in Brooklyn. And I remember, like, I had this really depressing, really depressing acoustic song that I actually wrote after I had my psychotic break at Hillsdale and I was on the horse tranquilizers.
Yeah.
And I'd just stare out the window at, like, the last of the autumn leaves about to fall off the tree. And I knew that, like, you know, 5 months of darkness was about to descend on me.
Mm.
And I was already in a dark place. But there was this one moment where you're like, and the Twin Towers out in the distance, and it's almost like they're vanishing.
Mm.
And that was like a year before 9/11.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, returning to the theme of a psychic experience.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
That's really weird. I didn't either. I don't remember it. I was drunk. I don't remember saying it, but I remember you recording it.
Yeah, because I can't find that song. I think I lost it on an old hard drive or something, but I wish I hadn't, because that one little snippet was like, whoa.
You know what I remember from that trip? I remember, like realizing that, like coming to terms with the size of Manhattan, like walking, turning another corner, just giant buildings everywhere. And feeling like, okay, this place could beat me down without even, like, you know, without even any effort at all. Like, it could totally crush me.
Yeah.
It's just so big and powerful.
It's crazy if you've never been, you know, like, Detroit's a big city, but it's all spread out. And it doesn't have, you know, it has two skyscrapers, maybe. Rensa. But, like, when you come out of the subway in New York, and you're like, in this canyon, man.
Yeah.
And there's, like, 8 billion people, like...
And there's got to be, like, I don't know, I mean, this is a totally crackpot, like, theory on my part. It's not even a theory, but it's like, there's got to be something to these, like, these cities. Like, that's on an island, right? Like, Manhattan's an island, right? It's like surrounded by water on all sides. Just, I don't know, man. I think there's, like, just different energy there than there is in the Midwest, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, Detroit is actually pretty mellow for being as violent and crazy as it is. There's something sort of, there's sort of this underlying Midwestern mellowness to it that's weird and cool.
Yeah, yeah. Were we talking about that the other day with California?
Yeah.
Like the Bay Area?
Yeah, the Golden Gate.
Like the energy of the land is so strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, those, how many, I don't know how many gallons of water going through the Golden Gate every day, in and out with the tide.
Yeah.
That giant bay.
I never even thought about it in those terms. Yeah. Well, Jen, what's your take on water?
Water is very destructive.
Just like cats. Cats feel the same way about water.
Yeah. She's an earth sign. So Hawk was saying something about, well, what's wrong with the water? She's like, water is destructive. And Hawk's trying to argue scientifically that water is essential for life. And she's like, man, it's destructive.
That's great.
Well, speaking of that, so I guess the last podcast, you know, I was talking about what was that movie, Unacknowledged? And you know, one of the claims that Stephen Greer and these various, you know, people on the film make is that, A, like, the government's already reverse-engineered UFO technology.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically, supposedly it's like the size of a paperback book, like the engines that power the UFOs, and it's just like a sheet.
Yeah.
And it's the interesting thing about it's like some nuclear fission or something.
Yeah. But it's like that zero point energy.
Yeah, and it has zero waste, and supposedly it's like smart, you know. Yeah. So it can, if you need enough, like the analogy he used is, if you need to heat up a cup of tea, it'll heat up your cup of tea and give you just enough energy. Or if you need to power a city, it'll do that.
Right.
So, we were just talking about how my takeaway from that, because you and I have been talking, and, you know, I've read a lot of things out there where people who I think are not total crackpots are estimating, you know, this sort of end of scarcity in very aggressive time frames, like 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Which for me, as, you know, as utopian dreamer, idealist, optimist as I am, seems unbelievable.
But we shouldn't confuse end of scarcity or abundance. We shouldn't confuse abundance with the survival of the human race. Right? The end of scarcity could very well be the moment when we, like, that could be the great filter for us, right? Like, in terms of the Fermi paradox, like, why don't we find other intelligent life out there? There must be some filter that every civilization hits at some point that prevents them from, like, going to the stars. Self-destruction, you know, some sort of, you know, fall back in technology, whatever. So just in Atlantis, my mind, right? Yeah.
Yeah, like what happens, you know, the legend of Atlantis.
Right.
Hubris.
Right, or you know, the eternal return, right? That there's a click and then you start back over, whatever that is.
Well, and, you know, this, I thought that documentary was fascinating on several levels, but one of them being that, like, he shows this letter from the French president, and I can't remember which president it was like two presidents ago.
Oh, yeah, it was the guy with the...
Sarkozy?
Yeah, Sarkozy, yeah.
Yeah, where they're like, wow, we're so appreciative of your work, and, you know, here we are in contact with extraterrestrial civilization, the French government, you know. And I'm like, of course the French, you know, they would be. But he's like, you know, I couldn't show this for until that government was out, blah blah. But, you know, one of the claims made in this film is that we're aware of, and they're aware of us, you know, several intergalactic civilizations, but they won't, and maybe this is kind of part of the filter, is they won't really share anything with us that's super valuable, you know, their technology, because we're too hostile.
Mm. You know what's interesting? Threat, like, know? So I always come at that stuff with a skeptic's point of view, which is weird, because I don't really, I don't, whatever, I don't want to be skeptical. One thing that really struck me, however, so like if you think about what we're trying to do with the Hadron Collider, right? Like the idea is that those neutrinos or whatever it is, the particles that are created when you collide two atoms, I don't remember what they're colliding to, neutrons or something.
Is
right?
that CERN?
Yeah.
Is that the thing in Switzerland? Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea is that, you know, when that happens, those particles enter different dimensions and then sort of return with extra stuff, right? Stuff is just comes out of other dimensions. So the reason I...
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So the reason I bring all that up is the one of the points that really did strike home with me was the idea that you see a high degree of UFO activity and have seen it. It sort of coincides with the advent of the nuclear age because the detonation of a nuclear bomb would be like the Hadron Collider times 1,000, as far as I understand, right? So the idea that there are other dimensions that are affected by nuclear devices, right? And that's why you've seen more UFO activity since the 40s, like the 40s, 50s, 60s, right? Is that it's directly related to how much we're screwing around with other people's dimensions.
Oh, because, wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because you think like, okay, so if we detonate a nuclear weapon out, in Mongolia or Siberia, where there are no people,
right?
Of course, there's going to be effects globally, right?
Right.
Because it's going to get kicked. But we could justify that as like it's not really hurting anybody,
yeah.
Except expendable creatures,
right? Right.
Or if you detonate it out, but then if you think of it as interdimensionally,
right?
Whoa.
Which that's what the Hadron Collider does, right? It's like at those energies, it does like the whole idea is to figure out why, sort of unify quantum and whatever, what's it called, classical theory, right? Like, and they haven't totally figured it out, but that's the hypothesis, is that you must be entering other dimensions to create matter out of nothing, to create new particles out of nothing.
Huh,
so,
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. Like, and yeah, like the nuclear stuff too, like it's funny, because we've never been affected by that, even though we grew up in the Cold War, I mean, we were affected by it, obviously, psychologically, but...
What do you mean, like, the fear of nuclear?
Yeah, we were affected by that. But
well, I was too afraid of the rapture coming and getting left behind, man.
Yeah.
Like, nuclear annihilation was way down on the list.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Eternal torment in the lake of fire. I'd take, like,
that's
nuclear
true.
Annihilation any day.
That's true. Yeah, right. You just hope the bomb could reach hell.
Right.
You hope they can find hell and target that, too.
Right.
But there's a, I know someone here in Boston who is Romanian and was growing up at the time of Chernobyl, when Chernobyl had its accident. And I never realized that fallout cloud like drifted over Romania and Poland and created like, there was like 8 to 10 times the normal amount of radiation and food and other stuff and water that the, so like she's really affected on a, more like a, she has a lot of health issues and she has a lot of fear about health issues because she really doesn't know how much radiation she's been exposed to.
Wow.
So anyway, just like a side, kind of a side point, I guess. It's just like scary stuff.
Yeah. So because there was another point in there somewhere, but like my take from this movie was, what if... and there's all this stuff that's possible as long as, while we still have, basically cheap to free, unlimited communication globally, right?
Yeah.
Anybody can communicate with anybody. What if, we took some of these designs that are got to be out there somewhere and people started doing, in an open source environment, people started, like, creating these, so... not in any centralized kind of, so it's like somebody in Texas and somebody in Romania and somebody in, China and blah, blah, blah. Come back to the Ping C later. so like that would be unstoppable, right? Because once it's out there and thousands of people have these devices, I think then the cat's out of the bag. How are you going to shut it down? But you were kind of pushing back on that, and I'd be interested in Because basically what I was hearing from that is like, it's just a matter of time until enough people realize, hey, free energy is not only possible. Because like, I was talking in the last podcast about how I realized how much mind control programming is still in my brain that I wasn't even aware of. You know, like the fact that I still, there's a part of me that couldn't look at Roswell as not being a hoax. You know, so it's like all this programming for the last 50 years, you know, it's like, oh yeah, you just laugh it off, you know, because no sane person would believe that. Well, that's how I felt about Tesla and free energy. It's like Tesla's always intrigued me, but I've never bothered to read about him or actually look into, you know, the claims for his inventions, because it was like they're, one of those psychic curtains was there.
Yeah.
So now I'm thinking, like, what if this curtain gets lifted for millions of people around the world and everybody realizes, oh, free energy is here. All we have to do is produce these devices. To me, then, that's a watershed moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful idea. I think, you know, a couple things have come to mind, I guess. One is, there is somebody, I can't remember his name now, I'd have to look him up, but there's a French scientist who's given a couple of demonstrations of what and it's not called zero point, but that's basically what it is. And he's got some device that seems to produce more heat than it consumes. So it's like, it seems to be energy positive. And he's not letting people, he's not sort of like opening up the technology behind it yet. So there's a lot of skeptics, but he's definitely been sort of taken fairly seriously by the, you know, scientific community. So I think that's really interesting. I mean, the stuff about, so here's where my concern is, I guess, is like the stuff about like we're gonna sort of get together and find the documents, right, or find the information. I was thinking about this when you talked to me about it before. Last year, there's a ton of examples of this, but last year there was an exploit, and I can't remember the name of that either, but it was an exploit that essentially said, okay, well, you're a computer microprocessor, right? So what you're going to try to do is, as you see me typing keys and opening browser tabs and stuff, you're going to try to go and prefetch information I might want to make the computer run faster, right?
All right, what's an exploit?
An exploit is essentially somebody figured out how to find out what these microprocessors were fetching,
okay,
and then tap into it to start reverse engineering what people were doing on cloud computers, right?
Okay.
So the idea of cloud computing is, I'm Corporation A, you're Corporation B, we're both processing data in the same set of servers, but there's a firewall that where nobody can see anybody else's data, and these, right, people figured out how to get to the microchip level, essentially to the processor level, and then pull the data out using how it was built into the hardware. That's all to say, there's a lot of people that think there is no such thing as real anonymity, because,
right,
all of the chip manufacturers, the NSA, is already there.
Right.
Right. So, yeah.
Which I agree to.
Yeah.
I think trying to protect your privacy is kind of crazy.
Right.
In this day and age.
Even, but, yeah. So like, so you go through a VPN, right, a virtual private network, because you're trying to be, you know, you're trying to disguise yourself, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's possible. So that's the part that, like, unless, I just wonder how much we'd be able to actually put a network together like that. But then there's WikiLeaks, right?
So, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I think there's so much information going around that, you know, it's like, no matter how many kind of stooges you have working for the NSA, I mean, the thing is, like, you remember when the list of trigger words, mm-hmm, for terrorism was released? Like, if you see these words in one of the emails you're monitoring, you know, that's a red flag. And it,
right,
was like so obvious that,
right,
you know, no self-respecting terrorist would be like, I am going to bomb, blow up plane,
right,
you know,
right,
annihilate, right?
Jihad, it's like, yeah.
So, you know, you,
yeah,
got to remember too that, like, a lot of these people are operating on a really kind of low level of smarts, I think.
Yeah. But what about a rogue state like North Korea, right? They had enough technical know-how to hack Sony. Right?
Yeah.
And Sony's pretty, probably pretty tough to hack. They've got a huge sort of cyber espionage army. Like, they don't have, as far as I know, they don't have any oil reserves, right? So they would be a prime example of, there's nothing but upside for them to find and exploit this technology if it exists.
So why haven't they done it?
Right.
That's your question.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a good question.
Yeah. That's the, you know, I'd love to be rescued by aliens. I think we probably need it.
I mean, you know, could it be as simple as, I mean, go back to Saddam Hussein, right? The big bad guy of, you know, the 90s.
Right.
So we created Saddam Hussein. We armed him.
Yeah.
You know, and basically, could it go down to the fact that here's somebody who has unlimited power in his little domain, and if he upsets us too much, we execute him, we take it all away from him?
Yeah, you're right.
It could be the strong man kind of thing.
Right. I'm guilty of that a lot and not thinking on enough scale. Right? Like, it certainly could be that people like Kim Jong Un, you know, and others like that are already part of a plan.
Right.
Right. They're already part of an existing order.
Yeah.
And they know it.
Yeah, they know their place. Yeah. That's what I think, you know.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I mean, so like last year we were talking about, you know, AI and neural networks, and I don't know if you still feel this way, but like, just maybe we should have gotten this in earlier. You work for a big corporation. You're pretty high up in the data processing, computing, you know, thinking about how to do things, right?
Yeah.
Area. And, you know, and this is something that you've been researching for a long time. So I remember you kind of, I felt like you were saying a year ago that you feel like AI, you know, we're close to a singularity with AI.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I mean, and either, say it's zero point energy, or say it's like, you know, AI gets intelligent to the point where there are no problems that can't be solved, basically.
Right.
Right. Which is the promise of the singularity.
Right.
More or less.
Right.
Right. Either way, I mean, it's like we're on the verge, right, of this whole new... Because there's enough abundance on this planet if we're not just wasting it and killing everything and killing everybody, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we're like the, you know, like the cartoon character that's like, you know, paving themselves a sidewalk over the canyon one step at a time. You know, we're just like, we need AI, we need technology to rescue us, because I don't think there's any hope for the human race otherwise. So, you know, what concerns me there is the same thing that you're talking about with the zero point, or, you know, the free energy, right? It's, you know, some people think whoever wins the AI race wins it all. And there's the potential for this also to be concentrated in the hands of the few. Right? And if that happens, I think it's a bad outcome for us as a species.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, the idea of, like, how to federate this, like, that... So that's where, like, blockchain comes in, right? Blockchain is another one that I'm, like... I love the spirit behind it, right? I love the idea of how do we build computational systems, how do we build, like, financial systems, how do we build transactional systems, how do we build, you know, ways to exchange information that have no central authority,
right?
And that have no need, somehow you don't need quote-unquote identity, right? Because the need to establish identity, the need to sustain identity, that becomes this whole other problem in social networks and everywhere else, which we've all seen, right? Like the Russian bot.
Right.
Accounts and everything.
Wow. So, will you hold that thought?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's something that's become really clear to me on a spiritual level, too, is that the need to sustain identity and the need to maintain an identity that you have been given is basically the root of all evil. It's basically why we can't be happy.
Yeah.
Because we're not that fixed.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Our nature is not to be... You know, I'm DK, and I like potato chips, and, you know, girls, and computers, and Jenny, and, you know, or whatever, and I'm an astrologer, and this is what I do, right?
Yeah.
It's like, we should be, and we are, by nature, way more fluid, but we put so much energy into sustaining identities and or fighting against the old identity, what our parents and family think of us, to establish our new identity. And then once we get into our new, think about, like, you know, I know maybe it's not quite as prevalent as it was 40 years ago, but women wanting to get married, right? It's like, once I get married and I have kids, then I'm going to be fill in the blank.
Yeah.
Right? You change your name, new identity. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But it doesn't work for any of us because it's not who we are.
Right. Right.
So there's just, we've been talking a lot about how computing and spirituality are actually kind of doing this Venn diagram thing, right?
Where they're
intersecting.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think they're coming together. I sometimes wonder if you know, who's a Eckhart Tolle, I think, said, like, you know, that the human experience was going to get simultaneously, like worse and worse, to the point that you couldn't think it could possibly get any worse, and it was going to get better and better, and those two vectors were going to go at the same speed, and then sort of at the last possible second it would tip over into the good. That was his view of it. I feel like that's...
It's happening.
Yeah,
right?
That's what you see.
It feels like it's happening.
Yeah, that's what you see. And, like, you know, are we gonna end up with, you know, so let's say that, yeah, so what's good about identity is it sort of drives behavior, right? Because there's a place to affix consequences.
Right. Right?
There's a sort of a body that can experience pain, right?
Right.
And need and ostracization, or however you say that, right? They can experience all those things. And so, you know, without that, how do you police it? Which obviously what you see with all, like, you know, people just like if you have the option, most people would choose to be a troll, right? If you're anonymous.
Right.
You choose to cause pain.
Right.
Maybe people get bored of that at some point. Right? Maybe that changes.
Or maybe there's an AI, you know, maybe AI is like, can evaluate those behaviors and just snuff them out before they happen, right?
Yeah. I mean,
regardless of whether you're, you know, where you come, they wouldn't have to know that you're a known troll. You know, right.
Yeah.
That you're John Brown.
Right.
And you've trolled on this board and this board. It'd just be like something about the energy signature when you start typing. It'd be like, meh. I mean, that's not far-fetched, is it?
No. I mean, I was just reading about these, like, news agencies and stuff. They're doing, it's called document vectors. And it's like, you know, it used to be word vectors, which is like you teach a natural language processing engine that, you know, this word is like this word. So, like, cat and dog are considered to be, like, in the same address because they're always used together.
Because they're, like, pets
or something. Even though they're opposite, right? There's, like, this word cloud around cat and dog that, like, semantically a computer can understand. But now they're expanding that out to, like, whole news articles, whole documents, right? Like, so this is what this means, this is what it's about, and I could start to group these together to put them in someone's feed, you know? But, like, that kind of tech is just going to get better and better, right? So that you can derive intent from something very large, right? Or from somebody's body of work or whatever.
So what were you saying about blockchain, though, and identity?
Oh, I just, you know, it's just really going to be really interesting to watch because I get it. Like, I get that it's funny. There's a lot of tech people that are just like, okay, well, what else is there, right? Like, we went from the promise of the internet to Facebook.
Right.
You know? It's like, what
dopamine
happened?
Dopamine harvesting.
Yeah, right. Like, this was supposed to be a utopia, right? Like, being able to connect anybody instantly to any information in the world was supposed to make us, that was supposed to be the end, right? We were supposed to then sort of use that to bootstrap ourselves into utopia. And instead, we have Facebook, and we have Twitter, and we have, you know, Snapchat. So there's a lot of people that are...
What's your favorite app? Grindr? No, what it was?
What?
Grindr.
What
were you talking about? Jenny's
Tinder.
Grindr.
Yeah. She's the other day. She's like, "Oh yeah, just I'm just on my Tinder over here." Were you?
Were you Tindering?
No.
Well, that does bring up something interesting that my friend Billy's told me. He said, "You know, man, anytime you you may not be hip to this, but, like, if you decide you don't want to be in a relationship, you can just have relationship as a service." And I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Tinder, it's a relationship as a service. Just when you want to be with someone or hook up with someone, you just keep swiping until you find someone."
Yeah.
Like, you know, so he's like, I don't feel the need to be in a long-term relationship because I just use Tinder.
Yeah.
That satisfies. Anyway, I just thought that was fascinating. It never occurred to me to think about it as a service.
Well, don't you remember talking to you about wanting to create an app where I can find a gay man to hang out with?
Yeah.
Oh, right, yeah. Emma wants that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a nice gay friend.
I don't know how to meet gay men just to have friends that are gay men.
You live in Atlanta, girl.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be
She doesn't like people.
I want to read a resume.
Oh, yeah, you want to vet them first?
Because the gay men I did meet turned out to be a little cray.
Okay, all right.
So I need to vet them first.
It's like when Kyle was doing internet dating years ago, and you went out, and he's like, first date, and the girl's like, keeps doing something under the table, and finally he's like, can I ask you, like, just what you're doing over there when you stop talking and kind of going under the table? She's like, oh, I'm just marking notes on my checklist.
Whoa, yeah. Nice.
She had a hard copy checklist, man.
Nice.
Back in the day.
So she was like checking off like things she needed out of a guy?
Things that he was doing right and not doing right.
Wow.
And he was like, well, how am I doing? And she was kind of like, well, you know.
That's awesome.
And he's like, yeah, and then so I dropped her off, and I'm thinking, should I try to kiss her? Because she was kind of cute.
Yeah.
But I knew I didn't pass on the checklist.
Yeah, but that could have, like, vaulted him to a whole new checklist, you know?
Yeah.
Never know.
I know.
That's one thing I definitely learned too late in life.
What's that?
You might as well take a shot. Might as well take a shot.
At what?
A kiss.
Love. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love, whatever, you know? Whatever it is. Might as well try.
Oh, yeah, man.
But let me ask you this, Dave. I mean, do you see the end of Facebook? Because I feel like Facebook has been dealt a blow that they'll never fully recover from. And I kind of feel like they hit their peak. And now I just see like it being like this downhill from here.
Well, none of the coders that work for me use Facebook. Like no young people use Facebook. So,
are these like millennials? Or
yeah, like millennials, younger.
Generation
you know,
Z,
yeah.
Whatever the next generation is.
Like they don't use Facebook, but I wonder, so I mean, Facebook's trying to get into this. Insta, mostly. Instagram, which is, by the way, a Facebook property.
Right.
So what the
MySpace?
Fuck?
MySpace?
Right, yeah, MySpace.
Dude,
for
MySpace
sure.
MySpace is coming back.
Yeah. But they, you know, like, and then I wonder sometimes, is that just like a... You know, we're at the sort of post-written word bandwidth problem, right? Like Insta gives you a lot more bandwidth, right?
Yeah.
An image has a lot more bandwidth to it than writing a post.
Right.
So I don't know. You know, I mean, do I think we're at a point where people will turn away from engineered social experiences? I don't. I mean, that's what worries me. I mean, you know, I was listening to another podcast and they were talking about how, you know, and I see this too. It's like, if you think about it, like we are already at a point where we have AI because we have people that essentially work for machines, right? Like you go to the beach, I go to the beach and I saw these two girls. They came to the beach. They like, you know, got into their bikinis, did their hair, went down to the water's edge, pulled out their phone, took a bunch of Instagram pictures, right? And then left. And like, they really never were at the beach. The beach was just there as a backdrop, right? Like the real reality was the reality of Instagram, not the reality of I'm at the beach. Like they never even experienced it the way you or I would.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I do think that's already happened. Like there are already people that have sort of, for better or worse, been sort of co-opted into I'm working for an algorithm, right?
Yeah. That's
Like it's already there.
I mean, it's like, you know, I don't have a Facebook addiction issue, luckily. Like it's always just so I can't wait to get off of there.
Yeah.
But I know lots of people who don't do Facebook because they're like, I get so addicted to the dopamine hit and then I can't just let myself do it, you know.
Yeah.
That's weird.
I don't know, man. They're missing out. They just need to go straight to heroin.
This is the place where all the junkies meet.
But yeah, I mean, back to like the, you know, like.
Can we just pause and give a shout out to Anthony Kiedis though?
Yeah.
How many times has he quit heroin? He's awesome, dude.
A lot of times.
Bless his heart.
A lot of times. Yeah, bless his heart. A lot of times.
Okay.
And they were so awesome, man, when they back when they just wore socks on stage.
Yeah.
They were something special. Like, you know, nobody had seen anything like the Chili Peppers back then. Like, yeah. 83, 84. They were sweet.
Anyway. And then, by the way, man, John Frusciante, the comeback album.
Yeah.
He's been one of my favorite guitar players of all time.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was Jerry.
But I said one of my favorites.
You know what I like
Jerry's
about,
like at the top, you know, of the pantheon.
What I like about Anthony Kiedis is, like, and I mean this with all sincerity, it's funny, I've been thinking about this lately, like, who are, like, terrible great artists? Like, they're terrible, but they're great. Like, Ethan Hawke, like, a terrible great actor. Like, he's awful, but he's great. I don't know how to explain it. Anthony Kiedis, like, he has a terrible voice, but he's a great singer. I don't know. Yeah, you know what I mean?
I mean, he's good in the studio.
He's oh, got no, he's better. Not. He's worked really hard, you know.
Yeah, but yeah. You know what I mean. Like, just...
Yeah.
And that's totally. Okay. Like, that's not a cut. That's like a...
Yeah.
You know, there's something about that I think is yep. really fascinating.
And, I mean, a lot of his lyrics, you know, are just pretty much disposable. But yeah. within any given song, he's going to, like, throw this one image that I relate to.
Yeah.
You know, somehow.
Yeah.
Usually about sex.
Yeah, true. True.
He has a picture of Jenny up on his dashboard in his minivan.
I'm also this is a random thought I was having this morning. This does nothing to do with anything we're talking
cool.
about.
Yeah. All right. We were pretty serious there for a long time.
All right. Well, I was thinking, you know why I like to travel internationally? It's like, so like, I like to go to other people's houses or like go on business trips because suddenly I'm not responsible for, you know, the water. The towels, like if something happens to the ceiling, it doesn't matter, like I'm leaving, right? But when I go to another country, I'm not responsible for anything, like their entire culture, all the people around me, their political system, like none of that. I don't have to worry about it, right? Yeah. It's their problem.
Yeah,
I'm just there hanging out.
Yeah,
it's like this immense freedom, right? Because like even somewhere in America, right, I'm still in America, like I still see something on President Trump and I'm like, fuck.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I still feel some tie to America no matter where I go. But when I go to, like, Ireland or England, it's like, I don't even know what the hell they're talking
you're
about
like,
on TV,
you're
right?
You're like, Brexit
yeah,
sucks to
it's
you.
Not my problem, right? Right. But that, I was just thinking, there's this, like, you're this like, multiplier by traveling internationally. Like, I've always been aware that I like to travel because I got out of responsibility, but I never thought about there's, like, this international multiplier where you're like, I'm not responsible for a single fucking thing that happens here, right? And none of it impacts me at all.
Right.
Like, there could be, like, six bombs blowing up, and I'm just heading to the U.S. Embassy. I'm out, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
What is it? It's Brexit. Is that near London somewhere? <It's> like, anyway. Yeah, I want to go there, because I hear everybody talking about it. And it's like, some people love it, and some people hate it.
It's a shit show.
Brexit?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, anyway, back to the, back like, the alien stuff, like, So, I guess back to the Fermi's, you know, Fermi paradox, right? Like, why haven't we been contacted? I mean, there's a lot of reasons that you could give. I don't remember how many he has. There are like six or something. But, like, one is, yeah, that we have been contacted, that there is ongoing activity, and we're just not aware of it. I think that's where you're coming from, right?
Like, yeah. I mean, I've been contacted personally, you know?
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, there was a probe, you know, but I kind of enjoyed it.
Of course.
No, I mean, it's just like, you know, just through meditation and stuff. I mean, I'm definitely like, you know, obviously my clients are as weird as I am, but, you know, in the mainstream kind of arena, but it's just really clear, you know, it's like even the Bible, dude. Like the Bible, the Elohim, right? You know, the Bible starts out talking about God in the plural in the Old Testament. So just by way of background, for those of you who might not know this, we grew up in an extremely fundamentalist religion where we were in church pretty much all the time.
I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. Wait, what's this called?
I have
called?
No recollection of that.
The Mandela Effect?
Yes.
The Mandela Effect. Yeah.
Which there's some theories that the Mandela Effect may be being created by CERN.
Is that Winnie
oh,
or Nelson?
Oh, wow.
Mandela.
Whitney.
Huh?
Whitney.
Which Mandela?
It's Whitney.
Whitney.
Whitney Mandela?
Whitney Houston.
No, Mandela. Oh. It was named after Nelson Mandela because there's this group of people back in the day that remembered Nelson Mandela dying in prison.
Whoa.
So this Mandela effect is these events that we collectively remember one way, but are really a different way. Like one, Ed McMahon. Was he the spokesman for Publishers Clearinghouse?
Yeah.
That's what everybody says, but there's no record of that. And Publishers Clearinghouse, look it up on the internet, has come out and said he was never a spokesman for Publishers Clearinghouse. He worked for our competitor, American Clearinghouse, or something like that. We've never had a celebrity spokesperson, but everybody connects McMahon.
So you're saying I can't YouTube Ed McMahon and come up with a video of a Publishers Clearinghouse commercial?
That's
right,
correct.
Now?
Yeah.
All right, y'all are freaking me out.
Yeah.
So there's just a series of these little events that we collectively remember one way that now history is saying, no, that's not the real deal. So they're small things. They're not huge things, but it makes us all feel a little like, whoa, did I just remember that wrong? Or did something really happen? Did we switch timelines? Or...
But they're saying CERN. Some people think
Some people are theorizing, well, maybe what CERN's doing is messing around and creating, bringing new things into or changing things within our reality.
It's like when we were on vacation and that fish bit me on the leg. But now everybody remembers it as the fish that surprised me on my nuggets.
That's right.
That's just good storytelling.
Okay, that's talk.
But that's, you know, like the stuff that happened to the diplomats in Cuba and in China, like the... You know, the electromagnetic.
Yeah.
So that's the theory is it's microwave, right?
Right, like, that they were assaulted. Yeah.
And that's, I mean, when you start digging into that, I mean, again, like, assuming that you believe that there's technology that's been kept secret, we were developing that in the 1970s, and then supposedly we're able to implant thoughts, right, or voices in people's heads at that point, and we transferred it to, we hired a few Russian contractors. To kind of help us finish building it out. I don't know what happened after that, but I don't know who CERN is, but that the technology, maybe that's part of it. I don't know. Right? Like, but then why wouldn't they have, like, then see, this is where I go, like, okay, why? Let's say that you had the ability to implant thoughts or ideas, right? Why would you bother giving these diplomats headaches and making them hear weird noises? You know what I mean?
Like, even what's the point of all of it?
No, I
now,
just
why
mean, like,
wouldn't you just go implant thoughts in their heads so that they would do
what
your
country
wanted?
If you can implant thoughts in people's heads, we wouldn't even be aware of the Mandela effect, would we? What would be the point? They could just rewrite it.
Well, you know what that makes me think of is the scene in Unacknowledged where... And I think this was supposedly literal video, right? Where there's you can see this flashing object and it's these red lights coming out at the key electronic points of the nuclear missile that was about to be launched, and this is in the U.S. desert. You know, and the guy they're interviewing, the operator, the Army guy, he's like, oh yeah, you know, my CEO calls me up, and he's like, what are you guys screwing around down there? How come this, what's happening with the launch? He's like, well, sir, you're not going to hear what I'm going to have to tell you. And he's like, what is it? And he's like, They're whatever they call them, UFOs. I think they had some jargon for it. And they've just, there's little red lights are coming out and the missile is not launching. And then Jenny was telling me that, you know, there's this theory that there have not been active nukes in the world since when? 70s or something?
Oh, I don't know. 90s? There's another gentleman by the name of Wilcock, who's like, in the same line of work as Dr. Stephen Greer regarding UFOs, but he is of the thought or the school belief that there are no more nuclear weapons in this world because they were all melted down by the aliens because we could not be trusted with them. So all the governments just pretend that they still have them just to keep everybody in line. But I don't know. He's a little further out there than Dr. Stephen Greer.
You know what, though? I've always felt like I've never been worried about nuclear war. And, you know, obviously there's some things that probably aren't right about me, but, you know, it's just like I have this really different perspective on a lot of things. But I always felt like we don't have to worry about that. Like Bob Marley said, you know, have no fear for atomic energy because none of them are going to stop the time. I've always felt like there's some invisible consciousness that is holding things in check, because if there wasn't, we would have bombed the hell out of this planet 50 years ago. Just human nature, you know. I just don't think sociopaths that are, who, you know, end up running countries a lot of the time have that kind of self-restraint. I mean, obviously our current president would if he could, right? But so I mean, maybe when I saw that, I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe that's who this force is that I've sensed. I don't know.
Yeah.
And we should wrap this up pretty soon, because the natives are getting restless over there.
Yeah.
Even though I think we should do this again, bro.
I had a lot of fun.
And Janiqua.
I had a lot of fun.
I did too.
That was cool.
All right, let's see. We should tell one last story.
All right.
About free energy when we were kids.
Okay.
I'm fishing right here. I don't know.
All right, okay. Well, I like how about this one?
All right.
Hockey told me that one time when I was a kid, a concrete brick fell on my head and cut my head.
Out of the sky.
Yeah. And I said, Hockey, your father omitted one important detail from that story, which was who launched the brick on Dave's head.
Dude, you tripped on it, man.
No, you were climbing on that thing above me. You kicked it off. Remember, I was below you, and you were climbing up that pile of concrete blocks.
No. Where was that?
It was out on the other side of the trailer in Lowell.
Oh, I don't remember that. I thought you tripped on one of those blocks that was on going up to the steps of the trailer.
No. No, it was a big pile. It was a construction site next door, and they had a bunch of cinder blocks.
I probably blocked that out of my mind, dude. I was probably unconsciously trying to get rid of you, man.
I'm telling you, man. This
look like an accident. Look at Jenny. She's all like, yeah. That's what he does when he, like, puts the pillow on my head and he claims to be asleep.
Yeah. And then he lies on the pillow.
Yeah, that's what she said. I did that, you know.
Oh, it's awesome.
He tried to suffocate me in my sleep.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Just keep you on your toes.
That's when I got the king-size bed.
Just had to see, you know, like, you got to test you out and make sure you're strong enough for the long haul.
Right.
Because you know there's going to be some challenge. You know there's going to be some pain.
Yeah, you brainers are crazy.
Yeah, well, there's a part of us that loves it. We love to suffer, man.
You know? True. It's the poet Robert Pinsky said that human beings, more than anything else, are attracted to difficulty.
Really?
Yeah. It's probably true.
Or as Bukowski said,
you can't eat that corn. It's green.
I've got endurance. And endurance is stronger than truth. Oh, good times, bro. All right, love you, man. That was fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right.